This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Haney. What can Wall Street learn from thriving small businesses on Main Street, and how do these businesses evolve successfully from their startup roots? Those questions prompted three economists, Paul Oyer, Michael Mazzeo, and Scott Schaefer, to take a road trip across America's heartland. Their journey is recounted in Roadside MBA, Backroad Lessons for Entrepreneurs, Executives, and Small Business Owners. Co-authors Paul Oyer, professor of economics at Stanford University's Graduate School of Business, and Michael Mazzeo, associate professor of management and strategy at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, join us to share what they learned from their travels. We can't take phone calls during this segment, but you can still join the conversation by emailing talk at wvxu.org or finding us on Facebook or Twitter. And Michael and Paul, thanks for being with me this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Good to be here, Mark.
Thanks a lot for having us.
Michael, the inspiration for doing the Roadside MBA, it had to be one of those epiphany moments. As I understand it, you actually got the inspiration from a shoe store with a really pushy sales staff.
Well, we were together in this bookstore, the shoe store, and we were just sort of shopping around, killing a little bit of time, and the salespeople were just on us, trying to get us to buy something. We were trying to understand that, you know, in our roles as economists, trying to understand what was motivating the salespeople to be so aggressive. We started asking some questions, and the questions about the sales pitch led to questions about inventory and pricing, and all of a sudden we sort of realized, well, this is a really good laboratory for seeing and understanding all the things we teach in MBA programs right in the small business.
Yeah, didn't you find out the store had a secret shopper program, and that's why they were so attentive?
They wanted to make sure we weren't watching them. That's why they were making sure we were being served, so to speak.
Well, how many years ago was that happened?
Gosh, five years ago.
So the
process of getting all the trips together and getting all the visits and then writing the book, it was a long process. But, you know, we wanted to get as many of these stories from small business owners and their experience to kind of merge and meld with our MBA knowledge in a way that we could really help them grow and run their businesses better.
Now, Paul, Roadside MBA sounds like something that's right down your alley. You wrote a book, the title absolutely intriguing to me, Everything I Needed to Know About Economics I Learned from Online Dating. Like I said, I'm intrigued by that title. You have to tell me about the book.
Well, that book is a very different thing. It is meant to explain economics using a context that's very different from what we're used to. And so it's similar to the Roadside MBA in that it's meant to teach people how economics can be useful in their everyday life, but that book was more oriented towards just anybody who's curious about economics and how it applies. And this book that Mike and I wrote is much more focused on how basic economics can be very important in figuring out an appropriate business strategy for a small company.
But I take it from the title of the economics and online dating book that you approach everything with kind of a gentle sense of humor about it to make it interesting to the layman, correct?
Well, that's in both of these books and in everything Mike, Scott, and I did, we tried to keep it as light as possible. I mean, teaching the things we teach in the MBA classroom can obviously get technical, and it could potentially get boring. And both for our own sanity as we drove around looking for examples and also hopefully to keep our readers interested, we try to make it as light as possible.
Michael, as far as the Roadside MBA, one of your laments about typical business case studies is that they focus on big companies. They focus on Procter & Gamble, GE, Microsoft, Ford, companies like that. What's the problem that you see with just focusing on what the big companies are doing in those case studies?
Well, there's a couple things. One is that, you know, we tend to see the same companies and their same issues recycled over and over and over. And, you know, the people who want to learn from them want a fresh perspective. So these small business owners, they have markets and products in all different kinds of areas. You know, we talk to everyone from a small PR firm to a funeral home to a garden center to a manufacturer of windsocks. And that, you know, brings variety that, again, helps keep the interest. The other thing was that these large businesses, they have complicated business strategies that span across multiple silos, and a lot of times the lessons there aren't really that useful or difficult to connect for small business owners. So we sort of figured that if we brought the concepts from the MBA program into the context of examples from small business owners, that would give a better connection and a way for the owners to be able to see how they could use the strategies to make their own businesses better.
Paul, you've seen a wide range of really interesting small businesses across the country. One of the ones that caught my eye was Dogma Dog Care. First, it's a great name. Where are they and what did you learn from them?
Well, Dogma is down in the suburbs of Atlanta, and it is the owner of the company, a woman named Robin Crawford, a very charismatic and interesting woman. And you could have written many different chapters in the book, or at least anecdotes that bring out important economic and strategic ideas using them. What we focus on when we ended up writing them up was the fact that they have, as do many businesses, a really interesting problem, if you will, or opportunity, if you want to look at it that way, which is that they have many customers that are very price sensitive and others that aren't. And they need to think about how, in order to keep their business in the best shape possible, they can cater to both of those markets without too much cross-contamination. And so we talk about her strategy for things like coupons and other ways of segmenting her markets while providing the best possible service to both ends of it. It's a really good case study for that type of thing. Now, as Mike just said, you know, if you go to Procter & Gamble, you can find lots of good examples of how they do the same sorts of things, applying how they try to apply to their to the multiple markets they serve. And so in many ways, you could take a Procter & Gamble case and apply it to the small business, but by looking at a case like Dogma Daycare, I think you see it from a perspective that a lot of small businesses can relate to better.
And Michael, you were starting to touch on the windsock company, and I think it's AeroSock in Enid, Oklahoma.
Another great, interesting business that, you know, we knew nothing about before we started. I didn't really even know. I've seen, of course, windsocks, but didn't really know anything about their manufacturer, why they were needed or anything. We talked about their challenge with hiring in the roadside MBA, and they have a really particular challenge because they want to use pay for performance. They want to pay their seamstresses who put together the windsocks on a piece rate. But not everyone likes to work on piece rate. You know, it's it can be stressful, and you know, if you don't fit well with that kind of compensation structure, it's not going to work out. And so what the owner of this company did, another very interesting woman named Donna Lemons, what she did was she instituted a kind of an intense multi-day training program at the beginning when she hired any worker. And the purpose of that was to try to establish as soon as possible whether the employee was a good fit. And that's the kind of thing that you really, you know, need to try to figure out one way or another as soon as possible, because hiring is such a big challenge for businesses.
So I think, Michael, the point go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say, we also learned something very interesting I didn't know, which is that all jails have windsocks flying outside of them. We'd never stopped and thought about that before, because if they ever need to shoot off some sort of means of stopping a riot, they have to know exactly how the wind is going to blow. You learn all sorts of interesting facts like that if you go out and talk to these small businesses.
And that's something I never knew either. That's absolutely fascinating. and you know, it's interesting too. In AeroSock's case, you say that this was less about attracting the right candidates than discouraging the wrong ones. So what exactly does that mean?
You know, the way that we approached hiring, the analogy that we use in the book, is that finding the right employee for your business is often like finding a needle in a haystack. Kind of your first intuition when you're trying to find the right match is to say, okay, let's get as many candidates as possible. And, you know, if we have as many candidates as possible, the right one must be in there. Now, that's true, but you're going to spend a lot of time looking through candidates that aren't a good fit if you have a really big applicant pool. So economics has a lot to say about how to think through sort of downsizing that applicant pool, trying to get the right fit up front, and then the search process becomes a lot easier. You're a lot happier with the worker that you get as a consequence.
And, Paul, you even were able to learn something from a funeral home in Tennessee, weren't you?
Yeah, the funeral home in Tennessee was great. I have to say that we ended up talking to the funeral home in Tennessee because we would call these different businesses, and, you know, we had different ways of figuring them out. But after a point, I just got obsessed. I really wanted to talk to a funeral home because I thought that would be a fascinating business. And again, it turned out they're all fascinating, but they had an aspect that I hadn't. He had a strategic point, like a simple point that was very important for his, for him strategically. He said that his mother, who used to run the business, had figured out that they needed to advertise because every time they went in to talk to somebody after there'd been a death in the family in the area where their business was set up, she noticed that there were two easy, what do they call, lazy boy loungers facing a big TV screen. And she said, that's how I have to reach people. And so it's a great example. Now, not all businesses are this way, but hers is, and as the funeral home director explained to us, the current generation explained to us, 3/4 of people only consider one funeral home. So from a strategic point of view, being that first funeral home they talk to is very important. So advertising really played an important role for him. And then we talked to many other businesses where advertising on TV would have been a complete waste of money. So it's a great idea. It's a great example of what we in the book refer to as Mazzio's Law, named after Mike, obviously, which is the right decision often, in almost any strategic decision, the right answer depends on the context. So for the funeral home, TV advertising was a great idea, whereas, you know, for the daycare, dog daycare, that wouldn't have been an appropriate strategy.
We're talking with Paul Oyer and Michael Mazzio, who are co-authors of the Roadside MBA, and we can't take phone calls during the segment, but you can still join the conversation by emailing talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Michael, what was your first road trip? What was the route of that?
The first road trip we took, well, it took us a while out in terms of timing and taking these road trips. So we had some time over the summer, and, you know, we weren't teaching our classes, so we had some time in August. And we decided to go to the middle part of the country just to start out. So we took a flights in, and we met in Memphis, Tennessee. And over the course of a week, we got from Memphis to Omaha. We made 4 stops, one in Arkansas, a couple in Missouri, and one in Iowa. The problem with that, we met great businesses and visited a very interesting part of the country. The problem was that part of the country in August is, I don't know if there's any place on earth that's hotter and more humid. And so,
Cincinnati, you know, maybe.
We were not prepared for that quite. Now, we overcompensated on our next trip because our next trip we took in January, and we ended up in Colorado and the plains of Kansas. And it was literally 120 degrees colder from our trip in August in the Midwest. So over time, we sort of said, okay, we got to plan these trips a little bit more carefully so that the month and the timing fits better with the region that we're going and where the weather is.
Quite a contrast there. Paul, so I can't imagine, what's it like going on a drive across the country in a car full of economists? I mean, what do you guys talk about on a trip like that?
Well, we talk about, I would say we can break down the conversation into 3 categories. There's a lot of, the most fun and intellectually stimulating part is after each visit, we break down what we just saw and figure out the economics and what was going on. So Mike mentioned the, you know, finding a needle in a haystack of hiring. So after we visited this one bowling alley in Missouri, we would spend some time driving as we drove to the next meeting or as we drove to the next town. In a case like that, we would have been like, oh, that that's a good example of what's known as the fence signaling model, and we would break that down a little bit. So that was the most sort of, I would say, the most intellectual part of our discussions. The second part was discussing our personal lives, which we won't get into a lot of detail on the phone here, but that often was entertaining. And the third part was, and luckily this was a very small part, but a week together in a car for economists would often lead to, Thursday would often be fight day. So the third type of discussion was often some sort of argument about getting after one of us got lost or somebody talked the other into eating at a restaurant that turned out to be lousy, something like that. But luckily, that was a very small part of it.
Paul, you just broke the first rule of fight day. You don't talk about fight day, right?
It was okay. It blew over very quickly.
That's because we would go to the airport and go home and not see each other again for a while. That helped.
Yeah. Time away cures it all, doesn't it? Michael, do you ever have people from smaller companies come up to you and say, "I'm really glad that someone is noticing our successes and the work that we do"?
Yeah, all the time. I think that, you know, one of the most gratifying things that I've experienced as a consequence of writing this book is the reaction from small business owners that really feel like, you know, they want to hear and show and understand. You know, one thing that we learned was that small business owners really have a passion not only for their business, you know, that's a given, but they also have a passion for talking about their business and learning about other businesses. And so, you know, we've been in conversations at conferences and in seminars and just, you know, hearing what people have to say about the book, it's like, wow, this is something that really speaks to me, and there isn't a lot out there, and they're really excited about that.
Paul, being an economist, you're a good numbers guy. Since you launched the Roadside MBA, how many trips have you made, and how many companies have you visited so far? Do you know those numbers?
Let's see. We calculated this. What is it, about 4,300 miles, Mike? Isn't that right?
I think it's more. I think it's now like about 5,000 altogether.
It's definitely 20. I'm pretty sure it's 27 states and well over 100 companies, probably in the neighborhood of 120 companies. We've had 7 road trips, I believe, now as well. So, and you know, we'll keep going. Hopefully those numbers will all build. We haven't done any outside the U.S. yet, and we started thinking about different ways we can branch this out into Roadside MBA International Edition. Canada seems like the easy way to go, but perhaps somewhere even a little further afield at some point.
Are you amazed by the variety of things and the variety of issues that you can learn about and experience on these trips?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. If you sit down, any given business, there'll be often a huge variety of things. So we, for the sake of sort of making the book organized in a nice fashion, would focus on one issue at one business. But many of the companies individually would have a fantastic set of span of issues as well. And then, you know, like Mike said, their passion and their excitement about it just made it really rubbed off on us. I mean, what one of the most pleasant surprises to us, I think, or at least to me, I will speak for myself here, is one of the things we really worried about at the beginning was, well, we want to go talk to these people. Why would they talk to us? And most people, when asked to sit down and explain their business for an hour, we're thrilled to do it. They're just that excited about what they're doing. And they would answer all our stupid questions. And some of our questions were hopefully a little less stupid. And you know, it's just, it was really very pleasurable to find that people were so excited to talk to us.
Mike, correct me if I'm wrong on this, if I have the date and the sequence wrong. 2012, that was road trip number 5, right? From Chicago to Cincinnati?
Yeah, we started here in Chicago. I didn't have to fly out for that one. And the guys met me here, and we drove, you know, all around Indiana, Kentucky, and Ohio, and then we ended up in Cincinnati. That was a good, I think it was April, actually, because in our first visit, on our first day, it was just after taxes were due, and so we were worried that the business owners would be justifiably grumpy on April 16th.
Maybe they were feeling a sense of relief at that point that it was finally over, at least for the next year. So what businesses did you visit in the Cincinnati area?
We visited a couple of really interesting businesses. One was a business called Burns Garden Center, and they're located up in Middletown.
I know Burns. Yes. Go ahead.
They had a really interesting family business challenge. So there were three Burns brothers that were involved in the business, and we talked to Mike, and Mike was in charge of the retail operations. And what they did kind of to deal with the family issues and try to make their business as good as possible is they divided each one of the kind of the divisions of the company and had one of the Burns brothers in charge of each one. So Mike was in charge of the retail operations, and Jeff was in charge of the landscaping part of the business. Greg, the third brother, was in charge of the greenhouse that grew the plants that were ultimately sold in the garden center, in the retail locations. What was really interesting was that even though each brother was in charge of one division, there were certain issues across the divisions where there would be different conflicts, right? If one brother did something to increase the profitability of, say, the greenhouse division, that could come at the expense of the profits of the overall organization because it would impact the way that the retail operation was operating in terms of, say, their pricing or their demand strategy. So even though each brother had his own sort of domain over which he operated, Burns realized that we need one of us to be the decider for the entire company, and that enabled the company to make decisions when there was this kind of conflict across the different divisions. It allowed them to have a perspective of, you know, here's what's best for the entire company.
Now, Paul or Michael, whoever wants to field this, because it's kind of a touchy subject. I read on your website the most memorable, horrifying, in parentheses, depending on your perspective, thing about your trip here was it involved the lodging choices in rural Ohio. Did you run into the Bates Motel or something?
No,
I think
Paul
no,
should
at
take
all.
This one because he was responsible.
This is Paul's fault.
The place we ended up staying was a perfectly nice place. So I was in charge of picking hotels on that trip for some unknown reason. Mike's doctoral dissertation at Stanford was about roadside motels and the market for roadside motels. So even though that involved had nothing to do with making reservations at roadside motels, we mostly put him in charge of picking our hotel. But on this one trip and on one other where we had another great hotel experience, somehow I was in charge, and I decided just one time I was going to be a little more interesting than the Holiday Inn Express or the sort of very sterile hotels we usually stayed at. And I made reservations at a bed and breakfast in the greater Middletown area because we were up in our first meeting that morning was in Eaton at a company called Henny Penny. I don't know if you know them. They're a
I've
little
heard
bit
the
more
name.
Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to try a bed and breakfast. And I have to tell you that my two co-authors are wonderful people, but they're not the most sociable in certain settings, especially Scott. And Scott was a little upset that he had to try to, that the bed and breakfast owner was just too perky for him that morning. So it was a little bit of an issue, but that
well,
led,
well,
there
was
that
the, also the issue
food.
Of the bathroom sharing, which I wasn't too keen on, although I just made sure I got up early enough to get the bathroom first, so I didn't have to deal with that.
All of this was not that big a deal, except it was good fodder for the Thursday fight, which was, of course, to follow.
So I know you mentioned expanding this internationally. Are you nearing the end of the line, or you have plans for more road trips around the U.S. in the future?
I think that based on our experience, we're nowhere near the end of the line in terms of, you know, the richness of these examples, and you know, we have, like Paul said earlier, toyed around with the idea of our next road trip being in Europe. We have, you know, 23 more states to visit, and so we need to make sure that we cover those as well. And I think that, you know, as business emerges all around the world, it's really it's really interesting to see how different companies in different locations are meeting the challenges associated with that. And you know, I'm excited to learn more and more. It, you know, it's a great learning experience for us too. And so I don't think that we'll stop now that we've had this great experience.
Well, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks so much for having us. It's been very interesting.
Roadside MBA co-authors Paul Oyer, professor of economics at Stanford University's Graduate School of Business, and Michael Mazzeo, associate professor of management and strategy at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. After the break, we'll talk with Red's team physician, Dr. Tim Kremchek, about a surgical procedure that might too commonly be performed on young athletes. And in focus on technology, custom-fit knees are gaining traction. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.